Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you here this afternoon. Well, anyone who's spent time working in a church or in church leadership knows that the success as a leader is oftentimes defined by the size of the church or the quality of the programs, maybe the effectiveness of the sermon on a Sunday. But many church leaders might struggle with their own spirituality, neglecting to maybe do something as basic as including the Lord in leadership tasks like decision making or planning or team building. So in that case, what's a leader to do? What's going on inside that leader's life that we may not know about as people who just attend or volunteer at the church? Well, we're going to unearth some of that today with a conversation with a very noted pastor and author and even teacher. Let me tell you a little bit about him and we can get started with the show of learning about what it means to be an emotionally healthy leader. So Pete Scazzaro is the author of two best-selling books, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality and The Emotionally Healthy Church. His latest book is called The Emotionally Healthy Leader, How Transforming Your Inner Life Will Deeply Transform Your Church, Your Team, in the world and the World. We do have a few copies of his book to give away. If you'd like to be put on a drawing for these resources, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You can enter your name there in order to receive a book. Pete Scazzaro is the founder of New Life Fellowship Church in Queens, New York, which is a large multiracial church with more than 73 countries represented. After serving as senior pastor of this church for 26 years, Pete now serves as a teaching pastor or pastor at large. And we are thankful that that gives you a little bit of time to write. As I'm looking at the title of your book, The Emotionally Healthy Leader, it kind of begs the question, how would you define a spiritually unhealthy leader?
I think there's really two primary areas. One would be a lack of self-awareness.
And the second one would be basically emotionally unaware continually. And then secondly, spiritually operating the deficit. That is, doing more activity than one has the inner life to sustain. So really, it's those two aspects together that I would put around that.
And so when you're looking at someone who you consider to be maybe spiritually unhealthy, where does that gap usually start when it comes to leadership in the church?
I would say it begins with low self-awareness, a lack of a life that has much reflection to it, unaware of one's reactions, how we come off to people, what it's like to be with us. I think just folks doing so much that there's just not an awareness of what's going on inside of us, or again, our impact on other people. So that's number one, I think. Secondly is our marriages or our singleness are neglected because we're doing so much to serve other people that our life at home, again, whether we're single or married, is not a priority. Mm-hmm. And it's neglected. I'd say a third quality is we're doing more for God than our inner life can sustain. And that's a tremendous problem. And then finally, there's no rhythm. There's no rhythms in our lives. There's no Sabbath rhythms. One of the great tests for me of is a person too busy is how they deal with the whole spiritual formation practice of Sabbath. The idea of just there's a rhythm. I don't work 24/7. I don't work 7 days a week. I've got a rhythm in my life out of which, again, keeping God at the center. I stop. I rest. I delight in God. And my life is not all church or all church work.
So, Pete, a lot of this book looks like or seemed like it came out of your own personal journey. Lots of the stories that you told had to do with your own experiences of being an unhealthy spiritual leader. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, again, I was pastoring New Life Fellowship as the lead pastor for 26 years. But in 2007, our church at that point had grown quite large and had a lot of levels of complexity, a good 20, 25 employees, a number of programs and ministries going on out in the community beyond the church. And I realized that there were some challenges of emotional health in the hiring and firing process, doing strategic planning, building teams and healthy cultures among the staff and among the different teams in the church and ministries. And I realized that the issues were inside of me. They weren't simply an issue of bringing in an outside consultant doing better planning, you know, all the leadership books that we read today, and simply implementing better practices, that it was an inner life issue that was informing the outer life. So it was very personal for me in writing this book because I had to look at some shadow parts of who I am that were very painful, and why I wasn't confronting people the way some need to be confronted or having difficult conversations that need to be had, because I wanted people to like me, and I wanted validation from other folks. And so it took me on a journey that was very intense. But and what I did, I started recording all my learnings and over a 6.5 year period. And, you know, I wasn't planning to write a book on it, but I realized when it was done, first of all, our church exploded. And I went through such a transformation myself and leadership that I said, oh, my gosh, I mean, I've got to write this down in a book because I don't know where this I've never heard anybody talk about it quite this way, which was really in an integrated way of our inner life informing our outer life as leaders.
Well, having worked in a couple of different churches, I can say there's a definite difference in culture when you're working in a church or really any Christian organization. What is it about that church leadership culture that can actually work against a leader like yourself being healthy?
I think it's pressure. I think the demands are enormous in any size church, small, medium, or large. And so to live out emotionally healthy spirituality, as we call it today, requires you slow down, requires you be reflective, requires that you look at yourself. These are hard things to do. But actually, the book is written for marketplace leaders as well. I mean, it applies to any Christian involved in any leadership. But I actually say that in some sense, all Christians are leaders, and we all have influence over others, whether we're parenting, whether we're a mom at home or a dad at home, or whether we're a carpenter leading a team on a construction site. We're all bringing influence wherever we go. But to be an emotionally healthy leader, that requires prayerful reflection, and one is on an inner journey of growth as well as an outer journey of, you know, seeking to bring Jesus to every situation. That's just, you know, the problem is that there's so much coming at us, it's easy to ignore it, and we just do the immediate and get it done and move on.
And yet you mentioned so many times that getting that base, getting those roots established of how you deal with all those situations is really what's essential to becoming a great leader and remaining a great leader. How did you realize that maybe that infrastructure within yourself wasn't what you thought it was?
Well, you know, it actually came about because I was in a situation where I needed to have some difficult conversation with some folks who were in leadership, and I kept avoiding them. And the question is, and why was I avoiding it? And so I realized the church was stuck until I led it. And it really took me. I mean, my wife Jerry, she's amazing. I mean, she saw it, of course, more clearly than I did initially, and says, Pete, you know, there's something going on here inside of you because it's so obvious. A couple of folks do need to move on from leadership, and that you're not doing anything, and you're kind of doing their job rather than have the conversation. And so it took me actually, I mean, I ended up going to a mentor, a Christian counselor, and really got in touch with some stuff of my own genogram and my own family of origin, and why was I not having these conversations. And to make a long story short, I came to the point saying either I'm going to lead this church with integrity or I need to resign. Because I saw that I was representing myself as this great leader up front preaching sermons. The church was still growing and doing well, but underneath it all, there were some issues we weren't addressing. We weren't living in full truth. I wasn't living in full truth. So that, what happened, I said, I'm going to be the executive pastor. I'm not going to hire the next executive pastor. I'm actually going to do the job. I'm going to get involved with the hard work of doing that work of hiring and firing and, oh my gosh, you know, building the team, confronting elephants in the room. That stuff is messy. Mm-hmm. Preaching sermons in some ways is the easy part. Mm-hmm. And everything else that can be so challenging. And so once I got into that, I realized how lazy I'd been and that I wasn't looking at some of the things that needed to be addressed. And so I was very broken by it. But I grew. I mean, I feel like I got a hold of my own integrity. And the church just broke through in such a wonderful way. And you know, out of that come all the latter chapters of the book on planning and team building, and endings and new beginnings. And New Life to This Day is doing so incredibly well. I gotta write this down, you know, all the learnings that we had during those years.
Well, I love the second half of your book because you do address with some really concrete ideas how to accomplish leadership within whichever organization that a person is in. But that first half of the book, I'm looking at your inner life and what is it about yourself that's prohibiting you from leading the way that you believe that God had ordained you to lead. And it's just so interesting because everyone probably has, well, their shadow, you call it, might be different. Most people have a shadow, right? Can you talk more about that, how you came up with that term and really what that meant in your own life?
Yeah, I use the word, you know, of your inner life, face your shadow. I started the book with that. And it's not face your sin, because shadow isn't always sin. They're tendencies, they're mixed motivations. So, for example, like a shadow would be, I want high-quality excellence in my department, in my ministry. That's a good thing. The problem is that excellence can cross a line and becomes perfectionism, and that I'm hard on people. That's shadow. So I got to make sure I'm aware of that and resist it. It's good. I want to grow the church. I want to see people come to Christ. That's good. The shadow is I'm now pushing people to grow the church because I have an unmet need to be seen as successful. It's a shadow. Wanting good doctrine, right? I'm into scripture. I want people to believe that know the Bible and have right doctrine. That is a good thing. But the shadow is I begin to be nasty towards people who don't see things the way I see them. And I get critical and judgmental. So I have one friend, for example, who's a leader. But what he does when there's a big meeting, you know, a big gathering socially, he goes to the kitchen and serves. And that's good to be serving. But for him, it was avoiding. His shadow for him is avoiding people and being insecure and not dealing with that, but yet cloaking it in service. So it's being aware of your shadow and facing it head on so that you don't bring that everywhere. You don't cast that shadow on your team, on the church, on those around you, because your shadow, you're bringing it wherever you go. And we ignore it in rooms or in meetings, but yet people know something's not right. They just can't quite put their finger on it.
Hmm. Well, you listed a couple of different ways that you can really figure that out. Of course, being in close connection with God is one of them. You listed a couple of assessments as well. What's a good way for someone to kind of go deeper within their own life and figure out what might that shadow be for me?
Well, the quickest way we've learned over the last 19 years is to look at your family of origin. And we have a tool. Actually, it's a free tool on our website at www.emotionallyhealthy.org. It's a tool called Genogram Your Family. And you look at your family over 3 to 4 generations, and you kind of map it out there, and you begin to look at trends and how that's impacted who you are. So that, we think, is the best tool to get at it quickly. And I really highly recommend that to your listeners. A second is obviously to get some really wise people around you, mature, that can help you address it and look at it. It takes a lot of courage, first of all, to even ask someone what they think it might be. But most people are kind of aware, you know, they know something's not right. They're just not quite sure what it is. So a more mature, you know, man or woman in your life can sometimes just help you look at it. What makes the shadow so difficult to get at is it's largely unconscious. Mm. And so it's bringing to consciousness what normally we don't even think about or acknowledge. So for me, I know in my early years, I was so driven to grow the church large, and, you know, for the glory of God and people meeting Jesus. But I couldn't even see the fact of some of this was driven out of a need to show my parents and other people that I was successful, you know, and my groundedness and my identity in Christ and just being comfortable in my own skin wasn't deep enough for me. And so it was all unconscious. But once I understood my family background, my parents were Italian American immigrants, it all made sense. And then you have the whole church culture, of course, which puts pressure on as well.
And this shadow, it sounds like it can really be something that would prohibit any kind of communication, whether it's between you and someone you're in a relationship with, in your family, or within your work, or even with friendships. Being aware of what this is that makes you react the way that you do seems like it would be beneficial in any kind of relationship.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know managers and coworkers and they get triggered. We use the word triggered a lot, you know. And when you tend to overreact or get triggered by a circumstance or a person or a situation, that's an oil light in the car going on that, hey, something's going on here, and you need to discern and find out what that is. But that overreaction comes from somewhere. So two people could be the exact same situation. One overreacts, the other doesn't. And those are good moments for us to, again, to allow Christ in and to actually be a growth moment for us rather than a avoidance moment.
I'm talking to author and pastor Peter Scazzaro today. He's written a fabulous new book called The Emotionally Healthy Leader, How Transforming Your Inner Life Will Deeply Transform Your Church, Team, and the World. We're going to talk more with Pete when we come back on The Emotionally Healthy Leader. Right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. We're talking about leadership today, church leadership, but also leading as a Christian or as a Christ follower in any organization. Talking with author Pete Scazzaro. He is the founder of New Life Fellowship Church in Queens, New York, in New York City, a large multiracial church with more than 73 countries represented in it. He served as a senior pastor for 26 years. He now serves as a teaching pastor and pastor at large and has had time to write this great book, The Emotionally Healthy Leader, How Transforming Your Inner Life Will Deeply Transform Your Church, Team, and the World. So we've been talking, Pete, about that great inner life and how important that is to be able to lead outwardly. We talked a little bit about that shadow, just acknowledging who you are and who you are as a leader. So once you acknowledge that shadow, how you lead, why you lead the way you do, does it help to kind of diminish all of the power that that hold that may be held over your leadership abilities and your ability to lead well?
Absolutely. I think it breaks the power of it. I mean, we walk with a limp. We all, mm-hmm. You know, we're not in heaven. So I like to say I may have lost a leg in a war and be limping, but I'm walking and I'm moving forward. So it helps a lot. Nothing's going to take it away completely, but I build into my life, for example, I've got some, again, trusted friends, I think, around me, and I take enough time to be reflective, and I know in my body I can feel it when something's wrong, and I take the time to address it, because I know that, I got this great phrase, you know, what you do matters, but who you are matters much more, and I am convinced the most important gift I can give my children, my family, our team, and the people I work with is who I am, is being anchored and centered and non-anxious, well-differentiated. That is the gift. And out of my life comes something that's influencing others for good.
Well, and as I'm reading your book, I'm realizing that as you lead people, if you are in any organization where you lead people, everyone kind of has a different bent, of course. They also have different lives. Some are married, some are single, some have kids, some do not. And so as a leader, is it important to get to know the situations of each of the people who you are leading so that you can help them discover these different shadows or tendencies that they may have as well?
Yeah, I mean, one of my, you know, my commitment is to see us impact the world for Christ. So in order to do that, that means that we're experiencing deep transformation in Christ, but also the people we're working with, we are leading them and creating an environment and a culture that is safe and where people are doing their own personal development. We're doing development together. It's part of our kind of ethos or our new culture. And so I can't imagine having a team of people trying to get something done without creating space for personal development within the team itself. So I think once you get into this journey of emotionally healthy leader, it impacts not just your own personal life, but it impacts the way you're operating as a team. It really changes everything in your life, your walk with God, your team, how you're doing mission, how you're doing your ministry, whether it's children's, whether it's outreach, whether it's ushers and greeters. I mean, it just informs everything. But because you're able now to have difficult conversations, address things that maybe would not normally get addressed, but you do it in a respectful, timely, and honest way, which very few cultures do.
Well, of course, as I was leading just a small staff, I think what I struggled with the most, what I struggled with getting them to do the most, was simply to take time off. I mean, of course, the need is great. The workers are few. There's so much to do. And just getting people to take time to even take a day of rest, to take their own Sabbath, seemed to be monumental. Do you find that when church people in ministry or even people in leadership fail to do this, that is just the beginning of the end for them?
Well, it's not maybe not the beginning of the end, but we can't give what we don't possess, but we're not going to lead people to depths of in Jesus that we're not experiencing ourselves. And so the failure to stop, and again, two of the chapters of the inner life are slow down for loving union, and another one is Sabbath, practicing Sabbath delight. But the slow down is really an expression of trust. And the failure to slow down is actually unbelief and anxiety. I didn't stop for years. I was, again, I couldn't trust that God's actually on the throne building his church, that things are going to fall apart if I don't do it. So we end up over-functioning. We do for others what we can and should do, what they can and should do for themselves. And so this issue of slowing down is so critical in the 21st century church globally, not just here in the United States. Whether it's rural, Midwest, West Coast, East Coast, cities, young, old, everybody is overwhelmed, stressed, and overloaded. And so the question is, can we trust God to run the world? Can we trust him to be on the throne and build his church? Now, the problem is we're trying to do some things that God never asked us to do. And so what happens is we're not listening to him. We're doing for him, but without listening to him. That is a big problem for anybody who calls himself a Christian and is a leader. So yeah, I would say it's life and death. I think again, most churches in America, we're just doing. We're doing activity. We're doing programs. We're concerned about that. But I'm amazed at how many people in our churches are not spending time with God and whose lives are out of control. And yet programmatically on the surface, it looks really good. That's a problem. And again, it eventually will come out. The cracks in that building will eventually surface. It's not sustainable.
Well, talking to author Pete Scazzaro today about his new book, The Emotionally Healthy Leader, How Transforming Your Inner Life Will Deeply Transform Your Church, Your Team, and the World. We're talking about inner life right now, but we're going to talk about exactly how that does transform your church, your team, and the world. What can we do? We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith for the second half hour of our program. We're talking with author Pete Scazzaro today about his book, The Emotionally Healthy Leader, How Transforming Your Inner Life Will Deeply Transform Your Church, Your Team, and the World. And we've been talking quite a bit about just taking time to rest, to, of course, feed yourself spiritually, to let God feed you and lead you. If you're a leader in a church or you're a leader of an organization, well, I'm guessing that society kind of rules sometimes when we decide that we're going to push and push and push to get the kind of success that we think that we need to achieve. But success comes in different ways, does it not, Pete?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things that you write about quite a bit is just having success in those relationships that are outside of your work. In fact, you talk about just balancing your life, both if you're married or if you're single, just taking a look at those relationships. Why is that essential to being a great leader and achieving some success at work?
Yeah, actually, leading out of your marriage or singleness is probably the most radical note in the actual chapter itself. Mm-hmm. And really, it comes out of a theology that, again, the greatest gift we can give is who we are. But if you're married, you've made a vow of marriage. That vow is to make marriage, your marriage now, your first ambition, your first passion, and actually is meant by God to be a sign and wonder, pointing and tasting of the love of Christ. In other words, when people come in contact with your marriage, they see something of the depth of the love of God they can see in no other relationship. There's no relationship as close as a married relationship because there's a sexual dimension to it. I'm naked with only one person, my wife. And so we bear witness to the depth of the love of God. And as Paul writes in Ephesians 5, we bear witness to the love of Jesus and his church. In other words, people can see in a Christian marriage, it's very different than a secular marriage, something here that's a reflection of the love of Jesus for the world, the love of Jesus for the church. Now that means the quality of that marriage, how I do conflict, how we do differences, how we do sexuality, all our shadow, all of our stuff comes out in marriage. And so the working out of having a great marriage that's a sign and a wonder of Jesus, that is the greatest gift I can give the church. And the same thing applies to singles. Singles, too, and there are different types of singles that I talk about in the book. There are singles that'd like to be married, most people, but they're not. Or singles who, so there's a few who feel called to it for life. But that even my singleness, we're all married to Christ, but a single person as well needs a community. They don't just give their body away to people because I'm married to Jesus. And I live out my singleness differently because I'm a follower of Christ. And the health of both that singleness and our marriages is the greatest gift we can give our communities because that's the core of our lives, you know, as we follow Christ. I said, it's all really interesting about this. I mean, I had a guy from Harvard Business School came and visited me at New Life. He's a Christian. He teaches courses at the Harvard MBA program. And he said, this thing you're talking about leading out of your marriage, because he goes, it is the most applicable principle to the whole corporate world. Because he goes, my observation is that even in CEOs and in the corporate leadership, that when their marriages are not in order, it all comes out in the way they treat people in the organization. It comes out in their own integrity and who they are. And I said, he goes, you're approaching it obviously from a Christian perspective. You know, when Paul talks about if you can't manage your own family, how are you going to manage the church of God? You know, 1 Timothy 3, when he gives the requirements of an elder. And he's talking about integrity. But he said, you have nailed something that actually has so much application to the secular marketplace. But again, I mean, I don't think we don't disciple people in marriage. We don't talk about that very much. We're not comfortable talking about sexuality in most churches. But that's where people live, like, every day. So, yes, part of what I'm doing in this book is raising the bar of saying, if you're a leader, leading out of your marriage or leading out of your singleness is one of the marks of an emotionally healthy leader. Mm-hmm.
Well, I love that you tell a story as it applies to planning and decision-making, where you were talking to your wife about a decision that you'd made. Now, it's a little bit different. I'll just set up that your wife was involved in a leadership role in your church as well. So, but you were talking about starting a new service, a Spanish-speaking service. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And maybe that can lead us into this decision-making, planning and decision-making part.
Yeah, because all these inner life issues inform all our outer life activities as leaders. So in my case, in this case, I told about in the book, was we were going to expand out and start a Spanish service. And, you know, I felt God spoke to me. This was God's will. And I just informed my wife one day. I just told her we're going to do this. She's like, that's ridiculous. You don't have the space in your life to do this. The church isn't ready for it. But it didn't matter to me what she said. And I wasn't even thinking about how adding a whole other congregation would affect our marriage. It was not even an issue for me because I'm just like, hey, we're going to reach more people for Christ and build this thing. And so I was theologically so off, and obviously it was a disaster. This was many years ago. But the lead out of my marriage means I'm always asking questions about how is this going to impact my marriage and our oneness? How is it going to impact the marriages of those in leadership with me? And one of the ways I discern and make plans is I'm asking that question. I'm also asking questions about, is this decision and plan coming out of my shadow? Is this coming out of a drivenness in me that's coming from a wrong spot? How's it going to affect people's slowing down to be with Jesus? Is it too much right now? So you're asking a whole other set of questions as we're planning and decision-making when we're doing what we call today emotionally healthy spirituality. It really does affect planning. I'm even redefining success differently. I mean, I'm looking at like, wow, like what is success for us? The world just says success is bigger and better and as fast as possible. But that is not God's definition of success. I'm into bigger. I mean, it'd be great, but God doesn't have that for every ministry in the same pace and way. And that's a very critical question when we're planning and decision-making as followers of Jesus.
Well, and that seems like the ultimate question that you're deciding, well, what is success? What would God consider to be successful within the organization that I'm running? Would he consider to be successful if running the organization, running this church in this instance, running a church and having the pastor have a spiritually healthy marriage and all of the people in his staff having spiritually healthy relationships as well, whether that were within their own family, within their own marriage, within relationships outside of their job, would that define success? Or is success defined as bringing more people to Christ, having bigger buildings, adding new services? And it does kind of redefine, or at least give us the opportunity to ask God, what are you asking me to do here? What are you asking me to build here? Is it building relationships? Is it building a building? What is it? And that must be different for every person.
Absolutely. I think that there's a foundation of integrity. We can apply it to your radio station. You know, what's success at the radio station? Well, you know, foundationally, success is, you know, having integrity of we're living what we're preaching. And I like to define success as becoming the person God's called you to be and doing what God's called you to do. So if we're not living out the gospel values on our team, it really doesn't matter what we do. We're failing, okay? Mm-hmm. We're not walking with integrity. So that's out of whack. But then assuming we're walking, you know, we're going to walk with God, we're going to have that kind of integrity, I've got to then pray and discern what is success in our context? And it's going to be different for every ministry, every team, every organization. And so that's the great question. So for us at New Life Fellowship, we're in the inner city of Queens. And so if you come to our church, it can take you a half hour to 45 minutes to find a parking space. But one of our commitments is to the poor and to bridge racial, cultural, economic, and gender barriers. But that's success for us to do that well. I want to see us add people to Christ, but I'm not driven by numbers. We're very committed to deep beneath the surface transformation of people's lives, not just having people sit in a pew and having a crowd of people. So we need to define what does that look like. But it's a lot of work to discern what is success for us. And I'm not saying, you know, for some churches it may be, you know, grow to be 500 people, and we're like 1,500 adults, but maybe you have to have 10,000 people, and that's fine, as long as that's what God's told you to do, and maybe to have a smaller church and release other people, and maybe to be a blessing in your community, have a great youth ministry or children's ministry, but I think it's discerning what is that for your particular calling and ministry, and being content with that, versus comparing and envying, all that stuff. That's not good.
So when a leader doesn't really understand the power that they have to, you know, make good or bad decisions, how can that just create some chaos among their organization?
Yeah, I've got a chapter on power and wise boundaries. And actually that it came out of the fact that I don't think many of us realize, I know I didn't, the power we have. And I'm defining power as the capacity to influence. Everybody has power. And it's not just positional or title. It comes in so many forms. I mean, parents have tremendous power. Our gifts that God gives us power, our knowledge, our experience. And so part of health is I wield it like Jesus, like a servant. And again, I'm back to I'm self-aware. And I'm aware of boundaries and dual relationships and all that complexity and before God. And I was very unaware. And again, so interesting. I come from a family where there was abuse growing up. And so I always felt powerless as a kid, you know, as a child growing up in that kind of a family of abuse. And all of a sudden, I'm pastoring a church, and I also have these gifts of leadership and speaking, and I have all this power, but I don't know I have power. I feel powerless. And so as a result, I would say things sometimes, and people would be hurt or take it to, you know, really take it seriously. And I'm like, why are you taking me so seriously, you know? And but I was unaware of my power, and I really felt badly about it. And I think so often in leadership, we just wield power unconsciously or without really thinking about it, and people get hurt, or we don't build safeguards around us so that we do things well in the way we treat people. And so I call the chapter Power and Wise Boundaries, because not a lot of people talk about these things in churches, and yet it comes up all the time.
I remember when my senior pastor came down into the area where my team was and just, you know, kind of shot the breeze a little bit, asked some questions, you know, about fishing or a weekend or something like that, and was there for a short time. And when we had our team meeting later that day, I was just blown away by my staff saying, can you believe that, you know, we got to talk to him for a little bit, or he told, you know, talked about this. And I just made sure to walk and tell him that you don't realize, you know, because of who you are and how you lead, and the respect that you have, how important it is, or how people feel important when you speak to them. And when I was reading that chapter on just not understanding the power that you have as a leader, that story came to mind, because I realize no matter what position you're in, being relational to those who are around you is such a gift to them. And sometimes I think that we as leaders don't realize it.
Absolutely. I mean, think of a parent at the beach yelling at their kid, but not aware of their power. So, I mean, it's on every level, a worship leader choosing songs or preparing their heart to lead worship or lead a small group, but they don't spend the time with God to actually prepare. They kind of take it sloppily. They kind of get up there and just wing it, but it's really not, they're not stewarding something that's been given to them for a short time, in a way that's like Jesus, his power, he came under people. And I think, I wish I understood that more in the earlier years, but I feel bad that I hurt a few people, and I it wasn't necessary. I mean, I, you know, repented and asked forgiveness, but I just didn't know. I just equated it with position, but never fully unpacked it.
Well, today we're talking with author and pastor Pete Scazzaro. He's written a book called The Emotionally Healthy Leader. We're talking about, of course, what it means to be a leader, but also what it means to be in a relationship with the leader, how we can encourage them as well. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, especially if you have a leader who's going to be going through a transition, someone in your life who's going to be taking a new role or taking a new job. How can we encourage them? We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back at Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Talking to Pete Scazzaro today, he has authored a book called The Emotionally Healthy Leader. And Pete, one of the things that you mentioned in your book, that after being in leadership, being the senior pastor for 26 years at New Life Fellowship Church, you moved into a different role. So how was that transition going from the senior pastor to a teaching pastor? And how did that change the way that you viewed leadership in the church?
It's a really good question. In some ways, the last chapter, Endings and New Beginnings, is the fruit of the whole journey. Again, I'm the founder pastor of our church. And I realized in my 40s that I wanted to do a healthy succession, that I would actually hand this church over to a younger leader who would then take it the next 20, 30 years. And so I always had that vision. And then at the age of 53, I actually came to the elder board. I said, I'm setting a date 4.5 years out where we're going to do succession. I'm going to step down, I'm going to resign, and I'm going to come under whoever the next lead pastor is on staff. And there'll be an ending, but there'll be a new beginning. And so we initiated a 4.5 year process, and we did a succession. And it was a fabulous succession, but it was a journey. And I realized in doing succession, because I'd never seen it done well, to be perfectly honest. I'd always seen really bad successions, and I always wondered why it went so bad. But when I was in it, I realized that it's all about your inner life. In other words, it's not just here's 9 steps to a good succession. It's we're back to the whole dynamic of the emotional view with your book, which is your inner, who you are is more important than what you do, and who you are informs what you do. So for me, I learned a new level of letting go. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, like face my shadow, all came out. Like, I thought, oh my gosh, like my identity, my worth, my value, all of a sudden people aren't coming. You know, they're moving on without, our church is doing great. And I realized that if people are meeting God, they don't really care who the lead pastor is. I mean, they love me and all. I've been there, you know, people's pastor for decades. But as long as God was showing up and changing lives, people were really happy. And for me to step down and, in a sense, release all that power and then become a, you know, I'm on staff. And the lead pastor now is 36 years old, and he's changing things. I mean, same vision, same mission, but he does some things better than me. Church is growing and doing great. Well, it's kind of like weird. Like, I know, but like, what about me? You know, it's like, and so it took me on an inner journey deeper with my shadow. I had to, you know, slow down. My walk with God became like critical, that I had enough silence and solitude, that my identity was in Jesus, not in being a pastor. I was really big, like slicing my identity off and like, wow. So it was very life changing for me, our marriage, our family, but it was about my inner life, not just this outer thing of changing, but the succession was no small thing.
So what good has come out of that for you as you're looking at your life now? Obviously, the responsibilities have probably changed, but you must have a perspective that allows you just to see things from a different position, correct?
Yeah, you know, I again, nobody's indispensable. Many men, when they retire, and I was only 57 years old when I stepped down. I'm now 59. It's been 2 years. But I realized in a not just an intellectual way, but very visceral way, that I'm not indispensable. And that when I die, the kingdom of God's going to go on just fine without me. And I have a good perspective on endings and new beginnings, that there has to be an ending before there can be a new beginning. And that applies to all of life, whether it's a new phase you're going into, a new relationship. But for me, it really applied in succession. So I think my perspective was God always has a new beginning. You know, God is a God of the resurrection. And if we sense a prompting in his spirit that something has to end, we can trust him at the ending. And we have to wait in the confusing in between, but God will always birth something new and beautiful. And our church has so blossomed. And I do have the freedom now to, and I've been able to write this additional book in a way that was, you know, thoughtful. And I probably took double the time with this book that I did by other books. And prayerfully, I think I'm having a greater impact than I've ever had before, but it's not in the same way. I'm more in the background. I'm mentoring. I'm giving my life to these young leaders. I'm looking at the year 2030, 2040, and that the church will be bearing a long-term fruit. So it's been wonderful. I can't imagine not doing it, but I really want to encourage so many, you know, pastors and leaders, even folks like leading worship teams and small groups, who want to be mentoring people and you know, giving authority and power to people and serving them as they step into leadership and not just do it ourselves. And so I tell you, God just, I just feel so blessed, Joe. I just feel like God always shows up. And if we have the courage to let something end, and this, again, it's going to apply to everything from a role, maybe your, you know, your former role in your church, to move on to this new thing God has for you. It takes a lot of courage. It's really scary, but he meets us. on the other side, even though it may take some time for it to unfold as to what it really will look like.
It's patience. It's kind of waiting for that thing. I remember when I left a high profile job when I left to stay home with my kids for a while, and I was sitting talking to my dad over coffee, and he said, "Joe, put your finger in your coffee. Now take it out." He said, "You see how fast that filled in? That's how quickly someone will assume your role. God made you to do some things that only you can do, but this is not one of them."
Yeah.
And I just thought, every time that I've moved, at first, though, you kind of go, because you can't imagine that someone else is going to fill your shoes. But then once you actually do it, you realize he's totally right, that there are things that only you can do, but that's probably not one of them. And the good thing is that God can do anything. And so he can not only fill that role, but he's going to fill whatever is going on in your cup as well. And it's going to be something you may not even expect. And I'm just overjoyed at the way that he's directed my life by stepping back and just allowing him to do so.
That's beautiful. Because, you know, we're all going to let go. Every one of us, at the end of our lives, we will let go of everything. And we'll meet him face to face. So I discovered the cross through this whole process, like, what it meant for Jesus to let go and hang there naked on a cross. And that is the path of all of us. And the beautiful thing is that's the way we mature and grow up. And I feel like I've matured more in the last few years than I have in a long time. Mm. But it's all been through letting go and not being, quote, the center of attention. And I love it. I love the space. I love the freedom. I preach once a month, and I love preaching once a month. But I was just telling my wife the other day, I said, I wouldn't go back. I mean, that season was over. It's a new season. I love being part of our church in a different role. But I love not running it anymore.
So I know that you have quite a bit of resources available that I'd love for you to tell our listeners about in case there's someone who just caught part of the program or wants to learn more. Yes. Why don't you tell us about those?
Yeah, I would. You know, The Emotionally Healthy Leader is it's a book now. I mean, it's got a lot of content in it. So there's a free discussion guide that I would encourage you to pick up on our website, www.emotionallyhealthy.org. And it's set up for 9 meetings, let's say part of your staff meeting or team meeting, and it could be 55 minutes long. But each chapter's got an inventory in it that you could take. I would encourage you to pick that up and take it. There's also a personal assessment on our website for free, Am I Emotional Infant, Child, Adolescent, or Adult? So the emotionallyhealthy.org website has a lot of free materials in it. But this is the kind of book, as you pick it up, you're going to need to talk about it with somebody so you can apply it. If you just read it through, you probably won't make that many changes. But if you actually talk about it with someone, it could revolutionize your life and be a significant moment of shifting the paradigm of what it means for you to be a follower of Jesus, and definitely what it means for you to be a leader. And again, whether you're a board member, whether you're a Sunday school teacher, whether you're a children's church worker, a deacon, regardless, or they're in the marketplace and you're a Christian, you will be challenged in this book. But the change to actually do it, you're going to want to team up with some other people, and I want to really encourage you to do it. And along the way in the book, refers you to different resources and inventories to take, and I want to encourage you to take the time to actually, slow down and do it.
We do have a few copies of his book to give away. If you'd like to be put on a drawing for these resources, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You can enter your name there in order to receive a book. Well, Pete, thanks so much for spending an hour with us. It's just been a real pleasure, and I know our listeners are going to be blessed by it.
Joe, thank you very much. What a pleasure to be with you as well. Thank you.
You bet. Well, you've been listening to Connecting Faith. If you just caught the end of this program and you think, oh, I need to listen to that, well, just go to our website at myfaithradio.com. You can click on Connecting Faith and listen to the podcast of this episode. We will also have a link to Pete's website so you can get a hold of those resources as well. Thanks for listening this afternoon on Connecting Faith. Have a great day.